Good morning and welcome, everyone. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on March 4, 2009. We welcome those of you who have joined us today both in person and listening to the webcast of this meeting. Today, the board will consider a recommendation to re-propose an audit standard that would supersede the board's interim concurring partner review requirement. The board initially proposed this auditing standard on February 26, 2008. Before we proceed with the agenda, I will note for the record that all board members are present. The first and only order of business before the board today is a staff recommendation that the board re-propose a new auditing standard on engagement quality review. To present the staff's recommendations on this agenda item, I will turn to our Deputy Chief Auditor, Greg Skates. Greg.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, members of the board. And Dima Andrienko and I are pleased to be here this morning to propose a new or a revised auditing standard on engagement quality review. The board's existing requirement for concurring partner reviews was initially adopted by the AICPA as a membership requirement for its SEC practice section and subsequently adopted by the board as part of the board's standards. Currently registered firms that were not members of the SEC practice section, generally non-U.S. firms and some smaller firms, are not subject to this existing requirement. As our chairman indicated on February 26, 2008, the board proposed to replace the existing requirement with a new auditing standard engagement quality review. The original proposal was intended to enhance the quality of the engagement quality review process by strengthening the requirements in the existing standard. It attempted to describe a review process that would effectively target areas of greatest risk while avoiding duplication of the engagement team's efforts. The board received 38 comment letters on this original proposal. A number of commenters commended the board for proposing an auditing standard on engagement quality review and shared the board's view of the importance of the engagement quality review to audit quality. Many commenters, however, were critical of key provisions of the proposal, including provisions describing the scope of the required review and requirements for concurring in the issuance of a report. The staff analyzed the comments received and suggested a number of changes to the board's original proposal. The revised standard we are presenting today builds on the foundation laid by the original proposal. As Dima will discuss in a few minutes, the revised standard, like the original proposal, is intended to strengthen the existing requirements for an engagement quality review and lead to a more meaningful engagement quality review process. Also, like the original proposal, it would supersede the board's existing concurring partner review requirement and apply equally to all registered firms. The significant refinements reflected in the new proposal result from a constructive public comment process and are intended to better tailor the standard to its purposes. The most notable changes in the new proposal relate to the applicability of the engagement quality review standard to different types of engagements, the objective of the engagement quality review, reviewer qualifications, the engagement quality review process, the requirements related to concurring approval of issuance and documentation of the engagement quality review. Before I turn the floor over to Dean, I'd like to recognize the many people who have made substantial contributions to this project. First of all, I'd like to thank Jake Lesser for his thoughtful insights throughout this project. Also, I'd like to thank Keisha Campbell, Lucia Carumba, and Echo Piles for their analysis of the comments of the original proposal and preparation of this revised standard. Finally, I'd like to thank the staff of the Securities and Exchange Commission who provided timely and helpful assistance and advice throughout the project. And now I'd like to turn the floor over to Dima Andrienko, Associate Chief Auditor, who will now complete an overview of this proposal. Dima?
Thank you, Greg. The board's original proposal required an engagement quality review, or
EQR for all engagements performed in accordance with the standards of the PCAOB. None of the commenters in the original proposal objected to making the EQR mandatory for audit engagements. The overwhelming majority of the commenters did not object to including reviews of interim financial information in the scope of the standard if the board more clearly defined the requirements of an EQR for an interim review. Commenters noted that interim reviews are more limited in scope and have a different objective than audits. Therefore, commenters suggested, only a subset of the requirements set forth in the original proposal should be required for an EQR of an interim review. Commenters also recommended that the board modify the requirements for providing concurrent approval of issuance in an EQR of an interim review. While many of the commenters did not object to making an EQR mandatory for other engagements, some asked the board to reconsider the practicality of having one standard for different types of engagements. Some commenters suggested that the requirements of the original proposal were so specifically tailored to financial statements and integrated audits that it would be difficult to apply certain requirements to other types of engagements. Having considered these comments, the staff agrees that other engagements performed in accordance to PCAOB standards are sufficiently different from audits and interim reviews, and that any EQR requirements related to such other engagements should be considered separately. The proposal we're asking the board to consider today would require an EQR for audits and interim reviews with separate requirements for each. In the new proposal, the EQR requirements for audits and interim reviews are customized to reflect the differences in scope between these engagements. The proposed standard includes specific requirements for audits and interim reviews in two separate sections, each of which describes review procedures and criteria for providing concurrent approval of issuance. These provisions should better align the EQR with the engagements under review. In a release that accompanied the original proposal, the board solicited comments on whether the standard should state an overall objective, and if so, what that objective should be. Most commenters expressed the view that the standard should contain a stated objective. The staff agrees that a well-articulated objective can focus auditors on the purpose of a standard as they comply with standard's more specific requirements and apply them to particular facts and circumstances. Applying a standard in light of its overall purpose should result in more effective and meaningful procedures and help auditors avoid a checklist approach. Based on commenters' feedback, the staff recommends including in the new proposal an objective that is consistent with the specific requirements for performing an EQR and the requirements related to concurrent approval of issuance. It is phrased as an objective for the engagement quality reviewer rather than as an objective of the EQR, to emphasize the responsibilities placed on the reviewer by this proposed standard. Like the original proposal, the new proposal describes the required qualifications of a reviewer in terms of the reviewer's competence, independence, integrity, and objectivity, and it requires the reviewer to be associated with a registered public accounting firm. Many commenters agreed that the engagement quality reviewer should have a strong background in accounting, auditing, and financial reporting. A number of commenters, however, believed that the original proposal would require the reviewer to be a clone of the engagement partner, which they suggested was not necessary for an effective EQR. Commenters were also concerned that the original proposal placed too much emphasis on specialized industry expertise, which they said could limit unnecessarily the pool of suitable candidates and create resource constraints for firms. At the same time, many commenters objected to the fact that the proposed standard did not expressly require the reviewer to be a partner. Others, however, believed that allowing someone other than a partner to perform the EQR would provide more flexibility to smaller and foreign firms. Commenters who suggested that the standard allow only partners to conduct the EQR were for the most part concerned that a non-partner would not have sufficient authority within the firm to provide an effective and objective review of the engagement partner's work. Having considered the comments, the staff notes that the general competence provision of the original proposal merely sets a minimum requirement for those who would perform the EQR, but it does not require the reviewer's competence
to match that of the engagement partner. With regard to the industry expertise, the staff continues to believe that if industry knowledge is necessary to conduct a particular audit, it is similarly necessary to effectively review that audit. Therefore, the staff recommends that the general competence standard of the original proposal be included in the new proposal. The staff also believes that application of this requirement would rarely, if ever, allow a manager or other non-partner in an accounting firm to perform the EQR. However, because of commenters' concerns about the authority of the reviewer, the staff recommends addressing these concerns by including in the new proposal the requirement that an in-house reviewer be a partner or a person in equivalent position. For instance, a manager would not be in a position equivalent to a partner. Reviewers outside the firm would not be required to be partners because they may come from a variety of backgrounds. For example, they may be retired partners, professors of auditing, or other qualified accountants. In such circumstances, the staff believes that the general competence requirement that the reviewer be qualified to serve as the engagement partner in the same type of engagement should be sufficient to provide for an effective EQR. A number of commenters were concerned that the original proposal could discourage communications between the reviewer and the engagement team, which they said would have a negative effect on audit quality. It was not the original proposal's intent. In fact, in order to satisfy the requirements of the original proposal, as well as the proposal we're asking the board to consider today, the reviewer must communicate with the engagement team. In response to comments, however, the staff has made several clarifications to the provisions on objectivity included in the new proposal. Additionally, some commenters suggested that the board prohibit the engagement partner from serving as the reviewer of the same client's engagement for at least 2 years following his or her last year as engagement partner if he or she served as the engagement partner for less than 5 years, which is the maximum term allowed under the SEC's independence rules. The staff agrees and recommends that the provision prohibiting the engagement partner from serving as a reviewer for at least 2 years following his or her last year as the audit engagement partner be included in the new proposal. In describing the scope of the review, the original proposal attempted to balance the need for a rigorous EQR with the need to avoid requiring unnecessary or duplicative procedures. However, many commenters believe that the scope of the required EQR was so broad that it could amount to a re-audit. Having considered these comments, the staff is recommending a number of changes. For the most part, the commenters were concerned that certain provisions of the original proposal would require the reviewer to participate extensively in meetings with client management, make his or her inquiries of client personnel, and perform other procedures that would duplicate work already performed by the engagement team. This was not the intent of the original proposal. The new proposal makes clear for both an EQR of an audit and an EQR of an interim review that the reviewer should perform these procedures through discussions with the engagement team and the review of documents. This should clarify that the reviewer performs the EQR by reviewing the engagement team's work rather than by auditing the company himself or herself. Like the original proposal, the new proposal requires the reviewer to evaluate the significant judgments made and the conclusions reached by the engagement team, informing the overall conclusion on the engagement and in preparing the engagement report. And it also prescribes certain specific procedures. Some commenters were concerned that the requirement for the reviewer in paragraph 9 of the original proposal to assess whether there are areas within the engagement that pose a higher risk that the engagement team has failed to obtain sufficient competent evidence or reach an inappropriate conclusion was too vague. In light of comments, the staff recommends not to include this provision in the new proposal. The staff believes, upon reconsideration, that the specifically required procedures are sufficient to focus the reviewer on the areas of high risk. In an EQR of an audit, for example, the reviewer is required to evaluate the engagement team's risk assessments and procedures performed in response to significant risks, including fraud risks. The new proposal highlights this requirement by stating it in a separate paragraph. The reviewer is also required to review the engagement completion document and confirm with the engagement partner that there are no significant unresolved matters. A a reviewer that performs the specifically required procedures in the new proposal with due professional care would necessarily focus his or her attention on the areas of greatest risk within the engagement. The purpose of the required procedures in an EQR is to provide the reviewer with a sufficient basis to make a meaningful decision about whether to concur in the issuance of the audit report. That decision must be based upon knowledge about the engagement obtained through performance of the standards requirements, but concurrent approval of issuance is not a second opinion, and a reviewer does not need to perform a second audit in order to provide it. The original proposal attempted to articulate this distinction in the standard that must be met in order for the reviewer to provide concurrent approval of issuance. Specifically, the original proposal provided that the reviewer must not provide concurrent approval of issuance if he or she knows, or should know, based upon the requirements of the standard, that the engagement team failed to obtain sufficient competent evidence in accordance with the standards of the PCAOB, the engagement team reached an inappropriate overall conclusion on the subject matter of the engagement, the firm's report, if a report is to be issued, is not appropriate in the circumstances, or the firm is not independent of its clients. A substantial number of commenters objected to this proposed provision and were most concerned about the standard's use of the phrase knows or should know based upon the requirements of the standard. Some objected to the inclusion of what they called legal language in the board's standard and claimed that the proposed provision would change the nature of the reviewer's conclusion from negative assurance to positive assurance. Others were concerned that the provision would be unworkable because, as described by one commenter, it is inherently impossible to make a self-assessment of what one should have known. Similarly, some commenters believed that the proposed provision would, in effect, require the reviewer to serve as a second engagement partner. Additionally, some commenters suggested that the should know part of the formulation would create a potential for post hoc questioning with the benefit of hindsight or second guessing about whether a reviewer should have identified a condition that would have precluded him or her from providing concurrent approval of issuance. Having considered these comments, the staff recommends revising the formulation of the standard for concurrent approval in the new proposal. This revised provision would rely on the existing concept of due professional care rather than the original proposal's knows or should know based on the requirements of the standard formulation. Specifically, for an EQR of an audit, the new proposal provides that the reviewer may provide concurrent approval of issuance only if, after performing with due professional care the review required by the standard, he or she is not aware of a significant engagement deficiency. A note to the same paragraph describes a significant engagement deficiency as any of the same four conditions included in the original proposal's provision on concurrent approval of issuance. While auditors should be more familiar with due professional care than the concurrent approval standards in the original proposal, the requirement to exercise due professional care imposes on the reviewer essentially the same requirement as the knows or should know based on the requirements of the standard formulation in the board's original proposal. The new proposal's requirements for providing concurrent approval of issuance in an EQR of the interim review are the same, except that the first of these four conditions has been modified in light of the differences between an interim review and an audit. Specifically, in an EQR of an interim review, the first condition is the engagement team failed to perform interim review procedures necessary in the circumstances of the engagement, rather than the engagement team failed to obtain sufficient appropriate evidence in accordance with the standards of the PCAOB. As the board noted when issuing for comment its original proposal, information received from PCAOB inspection teams, findings from PCAOB enforcement cases, and recent academic research indicated certain deficiencies in the documentation of concurrent partner reviews prepared in accordance with the board's existing requirements. In order to address these problems, the original proposal contained more specific requirements related to the documentation of the EQR than the board's interim standard. However, a number of commenters viewed the requirements of the original proposal as unnecessarily burdensome. Some of the commenters suggested that the reviewer would be required to document information concerning all areas of the engagement, since all areas of the engagement could be subject to the EQR. Other commenters were concerned that detailed documentation of the EQR procedures and their results would be required, which would be duplicative of the engagement team's efforts. Most commenters recommended that the board clarify the proposed requirements in order to avoid excessive documentation related to the EQR. The staff continues to believe that the documentation requirements of the new proposal should be more specific than those in the board's existing standard. However, to avoid duplication of effort, the staff recommends clarifying the proposed requirements. Under the new proposal, the documentation should contain sufficient information to identify who performed the review, the documents reviewed and significant discussions held during the review, and the date that the reviewer provided concurrent approval of issuance. If the reviewer did not provide concurrent approval of issuance, the new proposal would require documentation of the reviewer's reasons for not providing the approval. The staff believes that these requirements should not be unduly burdensome or distract the reviewer from his or her task to identify any significant engagement deficiencies so that they may be corrected. At the same time, these requirements should be sufficient to allow the board and the firm itself to understand how the review was conducted and how significant issues were resolved. Finally, in making the revisions to the original proposal, the staff has endeavored to be responsive to the concerns expressed by the commenters and draft a standard that would enhance the quality of the EQR. The staff believes that the new proposal accomplishes this goal and recommends that the board propose the standard for comment for a period of 45 days. This concludes our comments. Now we would like to respond to any questions you may have.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Dima. Are there any motions regarding this matter?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Mr. Gallagher.
I move that the board instruct the staff to release the proposed standard on engagement quality review, as recommended, for public comment for a period of 45 days.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Dan and Steve. The question before the board today is whether it should re-propose a new audit standard on engagement quality review. The board initially proposed this auditing standard last February. In light of the significant changes in the proposed standard since last year, the staff is recommending that the board re-propose so they can have the benefit of an additional round of public comment. I support this approach in light of the significant changes that have been made to the proposal and the benefit that additional public comment should provide in setting a robust and viable standard. As I suggested in February of last year, an engagement quality review should provide auditors, investors, and issuers a tangible enhancement to audit quality. The proposal before the board today is built on a number of important inputs, ranging from discussions with our standing advisory group, observations from our inspections and enforcement staff, the current requirements of IAASB standards, and comment letters responding to the February of 2008 proposal. As Greg indicated, in all, 38 comment letters were received. While the highest number of letters, not surprisingly, came from the audit profession, we also received comments from investor representatives, fellow standard setters, and issuers. The comments received were constructive and helped guide the revisions that are before the board today. I thank Tom Ray, Greg Skates, Dima Andrienko and their colleagues in the Office of Chief Auditor for their hard work on this proposal. I also thank Jake Lesser and his colleagues in the Office of General Counsel who continue to provide our standard setters with skillful advice. As Greg and Dima have just described, the proposed standard has been revised in several important respects. The proposed standard continues to build on the strengths of the board's interim requirement and the best practices of the profession. Most importantly, in my view, the proposal continues to require enhanced review procedures that are meant to lead to a more meaningful EQR process. Because of the importance that the PCAOB places on the engagement quality review, this strong set of second eyes on the audit is critical to audit quality. At the same time, as staff pointed out, the new proposal reflects careful consideration of commenters' concerns. Among other things, in response to comments, the proposal distinguishes the procedure that would be required for an EQR of an audit and an EQR of an interim review. There was also significant debate in comment letters regarding the requirement for providing the concurring approval, that is the, quote, know or should know based on the requirements of the standard, close quote, threshold. The new proposal retains important requirements to support a careful and thorough review, but contains a revised formulation based on the auditor's existing duty to exercise due professional care. I believe all of these revisions are significant improvements that warrant additional reaction from the public. I encourage all stakeholders to review this proposal and provide their insights, including whether it could be improved. I support this proposal and encourage commenters to contribute further to this important standard-setting initiative. Before I turn to my fellow board members for any discussion, I must pause and thank Tom Ray for his service to the PCAOB. Tom has announced that he'll leave the PCAOB at the end of this week. Tom is an individual of great integrity and talent. His commitment to high-quality standards has inspired his staff and helped to navigate the board through several standard-setting challenges. Tom led his team through the development of AS5. You remember that one, Tom? And equally important, has primed his team for the next stage of standard-setting. Tom, I wish you the best in your next endeavor, and thank you for your service. I'll turn now to my fellow board members for any discussion. And we can start with the maker of the motion, Ben Gilmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also have a statement and like to ask some questions. The revised standard on engagement quality review, which we like to call EQR, that the board is considering today, is an important step in fulfilling our mandate to further the public interest in the preparation of informative, accurate, and independent audit reports. For that reason, I want to begin, too, with some thanks to all the people who participated in this project. Greg has listed a number of them at the beginning. I want to add special thanks to Greg Skates, Dima Andrienko in the Office of the Chief Auditor, Jake Lesser in the Office of the General Counsel, for their diligent and thoughtful efforts in bringing this revised proposal to the board. And, of course, special thanks to Tom Ray, who, as the chairman said, will be leaving the board at the end of this week, for his leadership of the Office of the Chief Auditor over the last 3 years. Tom, you've made some tremendous contributions to the board, and particularly its standard-setting activities, and we'll certainly all miss you. Completing the EQR project is a priority. Congress expressly directed the board to require a qualified person to provide concurring approval of the issuance of every audit report filed with the SEC. Based on nearly 6 years of inspections experience, it's clear that engagement quality reviews have the potential to reduce the number of audit failures. The board's inspection staff routinely identifies audit deficiencies that a properly performed concurring partner review should have detected and caused to be remedied before the audit report was issued. However, since the beginning of our operations in 2003, the board has been relying on the concurring partner requirements developed by the AICPA before the board's creation. Those rules are not applicable to all firms that prepare audit reports for commission filing. To address these concerns, last year, the board published for comment a proposal that sought to create a robust, risk-focused EQR framework that all PCOB-registered firms could apply. That proposal was intended to strengthen concurring reviews. However, it was not intended to radically alter the basic nature of the reviews performed under the existing rules, to substantially increase the cost of public company auditing, or to delay the completion of audit. We received nearly 40 comments on the 2008 proposal. Few questioned the importance of EQR to audit quality or the desirability of enhancing the existing standard. However, many were critical of the proposal and thought that certain elements were either not workable or would result in a process that was more costly and cumbersome than necessary. Today's revised proposal resulted from the staff's consideration of the public comments. It addresses many of the concerns expressed without compromising the basic goal of increasing the likelihood that reviewers will identify any significant engagement deficiencies before audit reports are issued to the investing public. The number of changes that had been made in the 2008 proposal was significant, and the range of issues addressed is large. Two examples illustrate how the revised proposal deals with topics that were particular concerns to commenters. First, the original proposal required the reviewer to assess whether there were areas in the engagement that posed a higher risk of audit failure and to evaluate the response to those risks. Some commenters were concerned that this, in effect, would require the reviewer to perform a kind of second audit. The re-proposal achieved the same objectives by instead focusing the reviewer on evaluating the engagement team's risk assessment and on the procedures the team employed. Second, the original proposal stated that the reviewer could not provide concurrent approval of the audit report if he or she knows or should know certain things that would make the report incorrect or inappropriate. Many comments raised questions about how a should-know standard would work in practice. The revised proposal replaces that test with a requirement that the reviewer may provide concurrent approval only if, after performing the required review with due professional care, he or she is not aware of a significant engagement deficiency. The result should be the same, but the concept of acting with due professional care has long been embedded in auditing and is more familiar to the profession. Reproposing the EQR standard and considering a second round of public comments will, of course, add to the length of this already lengthy project. It also pushes further into the future the day on which all audits of SEC-registered public companies will be subject to pre-issuance concurrent reviews. I believe, however, that the two-comment period approach will result in a better, more workable standard, also more likely to accomplish the positive goals that Congress had in mind when it directed the board to require EQR, and less likely to engender unintended negative consequences. As I said last November when the board voted to propose risk assessment standards, we need to be more open to measures, like second comment periods, that promote transparency in our standard setting and help to ensure that we get the full benefit of different perspectives on the impact of our standards. For a project of the importance of EQR, investors in the profession should understand what we are seeking to accomplish, and before we take final action, we should take all reasonable steps to obtain input on the practical consequences of the new standard. I do support the proposal, but I would like to ask a couple of questions that maybe can highlight some of the points about the changes. Let's start with the qualifications of the engagement quality reviewer. Dean, as I think you said, the original proposal would have permitted anyone in the firm to be the reviewer, provided they met the competency, independence, integrity, and objectivity requirements. The re-proposal would limit a reviewer that's in the same firm as the engagement partner to a partner or another individual in an equivalent position in the firm. I think you said in your comments that a manager would not be someone in an equivalent position to a partner, even if they met the competency and independence requirements. Who would be someone in an equivalent position to a partner that wasn't a partner?
Let me take that one, Dan. The person in an equivalent position, we have to look at it from the in the context of the organization or the legal form that the firm has elected to choose. Most firms choose to be a partnership or a LLP. In that form, we would expect the engagement quality reviewer to be a partner in the firm. And that's why we emphasized in the release that when you have that form, that structure, then the partner has the appropriate level of authority, and as long as they, again, meet all the qualifications to perform this engagement quality review. And we emphasized that it, obviously it could not be a manager, because they're not at that level of authority in the firm. Now, having said that, there are other forms, though, of organizations. There might be corporations where the firm may have shareholders, or commonly referred to as members, and those members then would be a person in an equivalent position to perform this role in engagement quality review. And that's the context of the way we've tracked this standard.
Okay, that makes sense. So I think what you've said then, tell me if I'm right, is if we are a partnership and have partners, then only a partner can perform the review. There's no one who would be in an equivalent position to a partner in a partnership. If we don't have partners, if we have members or whatever we might happen to call them, then we have to look at the group that's equivalent to partners. Is that correct?
That's correct. We have to look at the group, right.
So this won't be something where we'll have to perform an interpretive function then, and there won't be
I don't think we'd have to provide any interpretation on this one with respect to the in-house engagement quality reviewer. I think it would be apparent.
Okay, let's turn then to the issue that I think concerned the commentators the most, that is the standard for when the concurring approval could be issued. And again, as Dima, I think, outlined, in the original standard, the reviewer was prohibited from providing the concurring approval if he or she knows or should know, based upon the requirements of the standard, that it would be, your opinion, would be inappropriate or incorrect. In the re-proposal, the test would be whether, after performing with due professional care the required reviews, the reviewer is not aware of a significant engagement deficiency. Now, I know that at least one of the comment letters objected to any legal language, but let me ask a legal question anyway. Is this a negligence standard?
I would defer to legal counsel for that one.
Do I give a legal answer to that question? The re-proposed standard the staff is recommending today would refer specifically to AU 230, the auditor's existing duty to act with due professional care. That standard requires an auditor to carry out their professional responsibilities with reasonable care and diligence, which is a negligence standard. So I think that's right.
How does that compare to the standard that the members of the engagement team have to conform to?
Well, the members of the engagement team, of course, as auditors, have a similar responsibility to act with due professional care. So in that respect, it's the same. Of course, that said, the engagement team and the engagement partner in particular have broader responsibilities than the EQR reviewer. So whatever the scope of their responsibilities, though, those responsibilities must be carried out with due professional care.
It's the same. And in fact, as you suggested, it comes from the same place in the underlying auditing
standard. Right.
And just one more along these lines. There is at least one federal appellate case on the responsibilities of concurring partners, and I guess there are a number of SEC releases besides. How would you compare the standard in the re-proposal to the case law standard with respect to the liability of the POTS case, I guess, is the only appellate case I'm aware of.
Yeah, I there are very few. I believe there are more than one. But we think the re-proposed standard is consistent with the case law. I think both the SEC and the Federal Court of Appeals you referred to in the Eighth Circuit and the POTS decision have said that the engagement quality reviewer has a responsibility to carry out their review with due professional care. And again, that is the standard that's articulated in the re-proposal before you today.
Okay, well, we'll try not to use any more legal language. People. Let's turn to documentation. Again, I think you touched on this in your comments. There certainly were some objections in the comment letters to the level of documentation that the commenters thought that we envisioned with respect to the EQR. The original proposal called for documentation of things like the areas of engagement subject to the engagement quality review, procedures performed, and the results of those procedures. And I understand what we have before us now. It's been cut back now to more focus. Oh, I don't know. I'll let you say whether it's cut back, but it focuses now more on significant discussions held by the engagement team and the documents that the concurrent reviewer looked at. Maybe a preliminary question. What's the objective of EQR documentation? Is this essentially to support our inspection program? Or, because it's hard to evaluate the requirements without knowing what you're trying to accomplish. What would you say the objective is?
I would say that the objective of the documentation of the EQR is to provide a record of the EQR process. And the EQR is an important part of the audit, and it's beneficial for both the board and the firm to have a record of this process. As you mentioned, it's beneficial for the board because, for example, inspectors will have a better documentation of the procedures performed by the engagement code reviewer and others who assisted him or her. The documentation that was available for the concurrent partner reviews performed under the existing standard. And it's going to be beneficial for the firm because the firm will have a record of this important process. The firm may use it, for example, for planning the future EQRs, and it will be a record of the discussions held and the significant issues that were addressed during the review.
Oh, okay. How would you compare the level of documentation that the revised proposal would require of the EQR to the requirements of auditing standard number 3? And is it essentially requiring the same level of documentation as if we applied that standard to the reviewer?
I would say there are quite a few differences. If you reflect back on AS3, the premise behind AS3 is the engagement team is to document the procedures performed, the evidence obtained, and conclusions reached. Now you compare that to the engagement quality reviewer. What he or she is required to document those procedures performed, but those procedures are discussions with the engagement team and review of selected documents. He or she gains no evidence, and then he or she arrives at a final conclusion, concurring approval of issues or no concurring approval of issues. So there's quite a distinction between the two.
Okay, that's helpful. Well, let me ask a slightly more technical question. The revised proposal requires documentation of significant discussions. What's a significant discussion? Or maybe a better question is, what's an insignificant discussion?
I'd say, depending on the size of a particular engagement, there may be more or fewer discussions between the engagement team and the reviewer. Especially on larger engagements, there may be numerous discussions, and they may span several months, the duration of the engagement. And I just want to be clear that the new proposal does not require necessarily that every such discussion be documented. There may be information gathering discussions when the reviewer gathers some background on a particular issue. If that background is not readily available in the documentation, engagement documentation, for whatever other reason, or there may be discussions where the engagement team provides a status update to the reviewer on a particular issue, and the discussion would just be limited to the question, are you done with the issue and has it been resolved to? And the answer may be no, in which case this is maybe an insignificant discussion. Like here's an example.
It doesn't really bear on the
exactly.
Reviewers.
And to your point, in the release, the staff proposes to include a helpful guidance as to what the significant discussion would be. It's a discussion on which the reviewer relies upon. For providing concurrent approval of issues.
One more question on the general documentation area before we leave that. The original proposal had a paragraph in it, a statement in it, that the reviewer should evaluate whether the engagement team's work papers meet the requirements of AS3 in the areas that were subject to the EQR review. And that statement simply disappeared from the reproposal. I mean, what do you intend in terms of the reviewer's responsibilities, if any, for whether the engagement team is complying with AS3?
Some of the commenters, when they read this a requirement. They interpreted it as a requirement for the reviewer to go from A to Z on a particular matter that he or she is discussing with the engagement team. So, for example, if it's revenue recognition, that every single binder that's included in the engagement documentation should be read by the reviewer. And this is not necessarily what the reviewer would do in every single case. There might be cases when, I'll give you, for an example, engagement completion document is so comprehensive that it provides all of the documentation of a particular issue that the reviewer needs to understand, to comply with the provisions of the standard. In another extreme case, the reviewer may need to go through all of the documentation to understand what has been done or to comply with the provisions of the standard. So the commenters interpreted that provision for the review, the AS3, the mention of AS3 in the original proposal, as a requirement to review everything. In the new proposal, we do not mention AS3 to emphasize that the reviewer does have flexibility in determining what level of documentation is required in a particular case, basically facts and circumstances.
Well, let's talk about the engagement completion document. Let's say that the reviewer looks at that and determines that it's inadequate, or at least that it doesn't meet the requirements of the standard. What's his obligation on that?
The standard certainly does not prohibit the reviewer to sort of dig deeper and ask the engagement team for more documentation in order to understand the issue. If the reviewer determines that there is an issue that has to be addressed by the engagement team, he or she should communicate this to the engagement team, and secondly, ensure that the issue has been resolved before providing the concurrent approval of issuance.
Well, that's sort of what I was driving at. I assume that if he looks at the memo and says, hey, this doesn't meet the requirements of the standard, he has an obligation to say to the team, you guys need to expand this memo.
That's right.
He clearly has an obligation because that particular issue could be construed as a significant engagement deficiency, whereby that, as Dima mentioned, then that would prohibit the engagement quality reviewer from providing concurrent approval of issuance.
Let me turn to consultations. A number of the comments were concerned that we didn't say anything at all about the ability of the engagement quality reviewer to communicate with management and the audit committee. I mean, some complained that we might be requiring him or her to do that, but in terms of communications more aimed at transmitting information about the audit and being part of the relationship with the client. And we continue to be silent on that. We haven't made any change in that regard. What do you all envision or intend in that regard? Is it okay? Say the audit committee asks to speak to the reviewer. How should the reviewer respond to such a request?
The audit committee, your example there, Dan, with the audit committee, could be audit committee or any member of the board or member of management. If they so choose, they can certainly talk to and enter into a dialogue with the engagement quality reviewer. And that's not prohibited by the standard. In fact, that type of dialogue is encouraged in order for the board or audit committee to discharge their responsibilities. In qualifying as an engagement quality reviewer, they have to at all times maintain their objectivity. But this would not impair their objectivity in having a dialogue with an audit committee member or any member of management or the board, because that type of dialogue and discussions can be helpful to the audit committee members as they carry out their duties, because they may have some specific questions or concerns about certain issues that perhaps this particular person can assist them in gaining certain insights.
Okay, so we're certainly, I think you may have said, encouraged. We're certainly not trying to discourage the communication in any way. And just briefly, you touched on it, but the other kind of consultation, is it okay for the engagement team to approach the EQR reviewer and say, gee, we have a difficult issue here, but what's your advice on how we should
On that particular issue,
these receivables or whatever the problem might be.
When the member of the engagement team approaches the engagement quality reviewer, then when they approach them, though, the team should have gathered the evidence, analyzed the evidence, and come up with a preliminary solution to what the issue may be, and then bring in the engagement quality reviewer, because you do not want the engagement quality reviewer to, again, as I mentioned earlier, gather evidence. That you do not want to place that person in a role where he or she may be reviewing their own work. So it's important that the members of the engagement team do all the preliminary work and then approach the engagement quality reviewer for his or her insights on that particular issue.
Is it fair to say that it's analogous to the relationship that the client might have with the auditor with respect to an accounting issue?
Very similar. Very similar analogy, yes.
Last but not least, the effective date. The release says at the end that the revised standard will be effective for annual audits for fiscal years ending on or after December 15, 2009, and for interim reviews for fiscal years beginning after December 15, 2009. Maybe, Chris, could you explain in English what that means? In practical terms, what that means?
Let's start with the audit first. The audit would, what you mentioned, Dan, would be for, it would be for all of the issuers that have fiscal years that end on or after December 15th of this year would have to have an engagement quality review pursuant to this proposed standard. And so that would be for the audit. That would be the first time it would begin for the audit. Now, interim reviews, though, we took into consideration that interim reviews we would need a little more time. We couldn't make it effective this year, and we preferred to have the interim reviews effective with the first interim review of a fiscal year. And so that's why we put in the release they would be effective for the first interim review of fiscal years beginning after December 15th of 2009 of this year.
All right, well, holding all that in mind, and then keeping in mind that we have many firms in this country, including the very largest, that are currently performing concurrent partner reviews in accordance with the existing standard and their own internal firm procedures, and then we also have a number of firms, some in this country and some outside, that aren't performing concurrent reviews at all, how long do you think it'll take for firms to put in place the procedures to satisfy the new standards? And so what level of preparation do they need to be making now, I guess, given that we can't say whether we're going to adopt this standard in precisely its existing form until we get the comments in order to be able to meet those deadlines?
Let me break it down between the firms that are complying with the current requirement, then I'll talk about the firms that are not, that were not members of the SEC practice section and not complying with the current requirement. First of all, the ones that are currently complying with the current requirement, if they have been complying with the spirit of the of our current requirement, then this is not a dramatic change to their current policies and procedures that they would have to make. We notified the firms as well as the public that we were going to make changes back last year in February. So the firms have been, put on notice that we're making some changes, and they're well aware of that. And they're well aware with this proposal of what we would like to move forward with. So they can, they have adequate time to get the changes in place, any tweaks they need to make for their audits, and then subsequently for the interim reviews. Now, for those firms that are not currently having a concurring partner or engagement quality reviewer review the audits and interim reviews, for those, I would suggest that we're sending out of course, they were aware of the notice last year, and they're going to see a new release this year. But first of all, they need to, for all their issuer audit engagements, they need to make sure they have a person qualified to do the work. They can plan ahead now to get that person whether it's in-house or outside, make sure they have someone lined up. And then, going forward, for the interim reviews that will take place after December 15th, they need to go ahead and also line up those people and make sure that they have their schedule permits, schedule permits them the time to perform the timely interim reviews that would be required of them.
Start now.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have. I appreciate you letting me have so much time.
Charlie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, one danger in going after Dan is there's very little left on the ground here, but I'd also want to thank the staff, in particular, Greg, you and Dima, as well as Jake Lesser, for all your hard work. I believe you've thoughtfully and thoroughly analyzed the comments we've received, as well as the goals board members have expressed. The product today not only reflects all that work, but also reflects your entire commitment to developing standards that put investor protection first. And I do not say that lightly, because, in fact, there were a lot of calls to weaken the proposal. I'm only disappointed that reproposing means further delays in important investor protections. Our inspections continue to find serious audit deficiencies at both large and small firms, and better engagement quality reviews could and should catch those deficiencies to prevent investor harm. At the same time, I am comfortable that today's proposal retains the investor protections of the original proposal and indeed has benefited from refinement. Importantly, the proposal clearly states that reviewers are responsible for identifying and following up on the problem. I believe some auditors have mistakenly believed that following the proverbial principle of see no evil, speak no evil is a good approach for a reviewer. To the contrary, that approach has never shielded reviewers from liability when they fail to address problems that a reasonably diligent reviewer should have found and followed up on. The proposal describes a better approach for both auditors and investors. The original proposal prevented an auditor from providing concurrent approval if he or she knew or should have known of a problem. Some commenters seemed alarmed at that standard, although in fact that's the standard that applies today. Another way to articulate it is to say that reviewers must exercise due care. Due care may be a more familiar standard, and it may sound a little less legal, like legalese, and that's fine, since they both get to the same place. There have also been other refinements, and I will not go into them in detail. We've already gone into most of them in detail, which is good. And in general, those refinements attempt to correct mistaken impressions that commenters seem to have had, such as that the EQR is intended to be a re-audit. It's intended to be rigorous, and I think our inspection record amply demonstrates renewed vigor is justified, but it is not intended to be a re-audit. I also would like to say to Tom, Ray, thank you very much for all your years of dedication and hard work and leadership. You may have been the director of standards for the last 3 years, but you've been with us from the very beginning. And, you know, at a time when there was only a handful of us, you believed enough in the mission to take the chance to join us, and I truly appreciate it. And best of luck in whatever you do. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I want to join my colleagues in this expression of thanks to all of the staff, and a special thank you to Tom for his efforts during the years we've all worked together. Sarbanes-Oxley permits the PCOB to adopt interim standards, which the board has done. And Sarbanes-Oxley permits the PCOB to revise the interim standards, which is why we're here today. But as I read Sarbanes-Oxley, at least Section 103, my reading is that it directs the board to include in its standards a requirement for an engagement quality review for each audit of a U.S. issuer. And we, and I include myself in this comment, have failed to do this. And 6 years have gone by. While the board wisely continues to consider an improved engagement quality review standard, auditors of foreign private issuers and domestic auditors who are not members of the SEC practice section when the PCOB adopted its interim standards are exempt, and continue so far, to be exempt from this requirement. I would have preferred to extend the interim standards to all registered firms at the same time that the board acts to perfect the engagement quality review standard itself. and I regret this hasn't happened, and will continue to look for opportunities to act sooner rather than later on this important investor protection. There's a big loophole out there, and it continues. Thank you.
Steve. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If it's difficult to follow Dan, it's even more difficult to follow you, Dan, Charlie, and Bill. But the engagement quality review proposed standard we are considering today is a very important issue for auditors and investors alike. An engagement quality review is one of the primary methods many audit firms use to verify the quality of their own work. It is also a quality assurance measure that allows investors to rely upon an audit opinion when making their investment decisions. At year-end 2008, about 45% of all American households were invested in financial markets through mutual funds. That's 92 million individual shareholders, according to a study released last month by the Investment Company Institute. Congress had the investing public in mind in 2002 when the Sarbanes-Oxley Act mandated a whole new slate of investor protections. One directed the PCAOB board to require this quality assurance process, a second part in review and approval for every audit of every U.S. public company. The engagement quality review proposal we are considering today has been underway for quite some time, and I'm glad to see it finally nearing conclusion. Poorly performed second partner reviews are among the more frequently observed concerns cited in the board's inspection reports. The time and effort the board and staff devoted to consideration of the comments received when EQR was first proposed last February is evident in the standard we are talking about reproposing today. Joining the other board members, I want to thank the standard team led by Greg and Dima and Jake and the General Counsel's Office for their hard work. And I also want to join all the board members in commending Tom for your outstanding work. I've only been here for 7 months, but it's been apparent, and I join the other members in wishing you all success and all the best, and thank you for a job well done. I also want to thank the public commentators who took the time to provide the valuable input and suggestions that are reflected in today's proposal. Many commended the board for proposing an EQR standard and noted that a well-performed engagement quality review is, in the words of one writer, a, quote, pillar, close quote, of audit quality. The board, as other members have noted, received a number of comments. A strong supporter of the original standard wrote, quote, all parties to the audit firm, the public company audit, and the investing public have a public interest in engagement quality review being robust and effective, close quote. Other commentators, as has been noted, including some issuers and registered firms, were critical of the proposal. They believed it would significantly increase the time required to perform the review. These commentators suggested it would be amount to a re-audit. To correct this, they asked for clarifications on a number of the standards requirements. The revised proposal before us today makes clear that an engagement quality review is not intended to be a re-audit. It directs the reviewer to evaluate the significant judgments made and conclusions reached by the engagement team, to hold discussions with the engagement team, and to review documentation. The proposal also addresses the board concerns about the performance of second partner reviews that I mentioned are frequently cited in inspection reports. It specifies and enhances the reviewer's responsibility to validate audit quality. By requiring registered firms to provide every audit engagement with a competent, independent reviewer, emphasizing the integrity and objectivity of the process, the EQR standard would significantly further the board's mission to protect investors. The modifications to the original proposal respond to the comments we received by clarifying the requirements for the reviewer and the quality of the review. For example, the revised proposal includes the following: a clearly stated objective for the reviewer that is consistent with specific requirements for the engagement quality review, a refinement of reviewer qualifications that requires the reviewer to be a partner or similar member of the firm, or to be unaffiliated with the firm, a requirement that an audit engagement partner be prohibited from serving as the reviewer on that engagement for at least 2 years, a requirement that EQRs for interim reviews be tailored to address the specific procedures performed during those reviews, and a clarification of documentation requirements, including identification of the reviewer, the documents reviewed, a description of any significant discussions that took place, and the date the concurring approval was made. This approach requires a thoughtful and meaningful review of the work performed by the engagement team. For all these reasons, I support this proposal. I believe that it can improve audit quality and give investors the consistent and credible information they need to make informed judgments about their financial future. As such, I am anxious to see the board adopt the final standard as soon as possible, with the implementation of these requirements no later than the end of the year. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Steve and board members. Tom, is there anything you'd like to say to the group on your last time here? We should give you time if you'd like.
Well, thanks. Just briefly, it's been great to be here. I wish you all the best. CCAOB is extraordinarily important and will continue to be so. Thanks for the great opportunity to be here. Okay.
Thank you again. If there's no further discussion, I'll put the question to the board. All those in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried. There's no further business. This concludes our agenda today, and the meeting is now adjourned. Thank you, Greg, and thank you, Dima. Thank you, Elder Druid. We will rise from the open meeting and reconvene in the closed meeting in a little over 5 minutes.